And throughout this series, we're going to kind of look at this whole new life and what it looks like that Christ offers. And this invitation for new life that's for all humanity, regardless of cultural or social barriers or even like socioeconomical barriers, it doesn't matter. This invitation is for all of humanity. And we're going to kind of look at what's in this new life. So I'm excited to share with you guys this Good Friday. And I can't wait for what God wants to show us in this series. With all this excitement, though, I have about the series, I really hope you're going well with all your Easter plans. Because I know Easter's kind of changed a bit with the lockdown that happened. Now we got to wear masks. And now you're probably worried about other states if you're traveling across state borders, letting you through and that kind of stuff. So I hope that you're going all right with your Easter plans. And I know it's really changed a lot of plans for people, and it can be really frustrating. And today I want to look at a story that I think can help us have a new lens when trying to gain perspective in difficult situation. And this is in no way to minimize some of the pain that people have had from some of their plans getting canceled. I read about some family that had a daughter in Perth, and they had another daughter somewhere else. But they were going to travel to Perth and then travel all these cool spots throughout Australia, and the parents even got long service leave from work, and it was all set up, and then the Brisbane lockdown happened. And then some states started to say, oh, well, you can't come through here if you're from Brisbane. So this family had to cancel this, like, dream family holiday. So I'm in no way trying to minimize the crap when it happens or the bad stuff. I'm not saying it's okay and, you know, just get over it. That's not what I'm trying to paint a picture of today. But this Good Friday, I want to dive into a story found in the Gospel of John after the death of Jesus Christ, because this story can help us develop a new lens that is full of hope for the future, enabling us not to be permanently trapped in the situation in front of us. And I think that's the biggest takeaway I get from Good Friday, sometimes not being trapped in the stuff before us. Having hope in the darkness. And before we dive in to this message, we're going to have communion at the end. So I'm going to lead right into communion, which will be really nice and something a bit different for us. But before we dive into John chapter 19, verses 38 to 42, I want to look at some context. So if you don't know, oh, you can't even see that. That's so tiny. Can you read it? Oh, you guys are better than me. Gosh. This shows I need to wear a bit thicker glasses. Now, so the first thing, Jesus, after being tortured, so this is after he's been whipped and everything, Pilate kind of has him in a moment set up where he's trying to let him go. Even after Jesus is kind of, people have accused him as king and all this kind of stuff, king of the Jews, somehow Pilate still wants to let this guy off the hook. So he kind of tries to let Pilate go, and Jesus has his own people pledge allegiance to their enemy. The Jews cry out, no, there's no king but Caesar. And knowing some of the context around that, Jews didn't normally think like that. They wanted freedom from the Romans. They were oppressing them. But in this moment, he has all of his people turn on him and pledge allegiance to the enemy, an empire that oppresses them, that takes from them, that overtaxes them, that hangs their people on crosses if they don't stay in line. And then after that, he's nailed to a cross and humiliated by those around him. He's stripped of his clothing. They cast lots to gamble off his clothing. He has a sign mocking his whole ministry and everything he stood for in life. He's got people mocking him as he walks by. And he's dying in one of the most humiliated ways you could be put to death in that culture. And then on this cross, another thing that happens is Jesus, when he's getting close to the end, he's hanging on the cross, he's dying, and his mom's there. And there's one disciple there, and he asks this disciple, who's a friend of his, to look after his mom. Now, I couldn't imagine doing something like that, being publicly executed somehow, and having my mom and my friends right before me, and knowing I'm about to die, and look at my friend and say, hey, look after my mom. And then, after tasting some wine vinegar, because he starts saying he's thirsty, so they get some wine vinegar on a sponge and they put it up to him. He says, it is finished, and he gives up his spirit. And then after this moment, you have the Pharisees. So the Pharisees are kind of like your Jewish elites. They want to make sure that, and I have day because there was other people crucified with Jesus, two other people. They want to make sure that they're dead before the Sabbath. It's not good practice to have people still dying on a cross on the Sabbath. And if you don't know anything about the cross, it's a pretty horrible way, because what they do with the nails is it pins you in a way where to get air into your lungs and not suffocate, you have to push down on those nails that are going through your bones most of the time. So you're having to push up with your legs to get up so you're still getting air. You're having to use all the muscles you can. And sometimes it took a while. And the Pharisees wanted to speed it up. So they asked Pilate to speed things along. And Pilate gets the guards to do that. The way they do that is they break your legs. Can't hold yourself up anymore with broken legs. So they do this to the criminals, and they get to Jesus, and he's already dead. And the reason all this context is important is I think it really paints a hopeless picture for the first Good Friday. I don't think Mary and the disciples and anyone who would have followed Jesus thought this was a good day at all. There's nothing really painted to make it look good. It's hopeless. And I think we all have these moments in life that feel hopeless. And I don't know what those moments might be for you. I know I've had a few. And we always have some where we just feel like there's no hope. I know as a kid when I was, 19, and Kim first came here to visit with her family, and it didn't look like her family was going to want too much to do with me or let me come over, I felt hopeless in my room as a little kid. Because I was like, oh, I lost my high school sweetheart, and I'm not going to get the chance to be a dad, because she was pregnant as well. And that whole scenario felt hopeless. And we all have moments like that. And I think when we look at the text I want to look at today, we get even a bigger picture of kind of how crap has hit the fan in the sense. And there's not a lot of hope. So I want to dive in to the story and look at it. Because I think this story can help us have a new lens and gain a different perspective in these times of hopelessness. So let's dive into John 19, verse 38 to 42. And it reads this. Later, Joseph of Arimathea, I wish I could say those fancy names, it'd be so good. Joseph of A, we'll say Joseph of A, that sounds better. Joseph of A asked Pilate for the body of Jesus. Now, Joseph was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, because he feared the Jewish leaders. With Pilate's permission, he came and took the body away. He was accompanied by Nicodemus, the man who earlier had visited Jesus at night. And I want to pause there because all the other disciples and followers are kind of hiding in fear. And you have this guy, Joseph, who's scared of the Jewish elite. He's kind of got some class in there, so he's kind of secretly, you know, follows Jesus. He follows Jesus in the shadows. And you have this cat named Nicodemus. And if you don't know, throughout the Gospel of John, Nicodemus is a Pharisee. He's one of the Pharisees who kind of meets with Jesus secretly at night a couple of times, and he asks him questions. He's searching. So he kind of doesn't think Jesus is all bad. He at some points tries to stick up for Jesus, but there's not really a chance of that. So you have these two gentlemen trying to look after the body of Jesus. Which is a big deal because the Romans didn't care about the body. Oftentimes with crucifixions, what the Romans would like to do is like to leave the body there to decay for a little while as a sign to the people. You know, this is what happens if you step out of line. Make sure you watch out. The Jewish elite, they didn't want it left on the cross. They wanted it buried in some secure tomb and, you know, no one knew, and they wanted to hide it. So it didn't give his followers any hope. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't get the body off the Christ, off the cross sneakily one night and then tell everyone he raised. They couldn't do any of that. That was their plan. So you don't have a lot of people caring about this man's body after he's dead. But you have these two people in secret. Let's keep reading this story. Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it up with spices and strips of linen. This was in accordance with Jewish burial customs. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new tomb, in which no one had ever been laid. Because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. Now, I find this whole account of the burial of Jesus, according to the Gospel of John, really eye-opening. It really paints a picture for us. And there's one thing that stands out to me more than anything else. And it's that Nicodemus, in verse 39, and the one sentence of it, the second sentence says, Nicodemus brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. That's a lot of spices, right? Like, that's a lot. That's not just a little bit. And it's left many scholars asking, why so many spices? Wasn't accustomed to Jewish burial. It was really like way more than enough. Like, he went over the top with it for some reason. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they also think, well, someone else had to help him. You know, they're having to carry a dead body. There's 75 pounds of spices. There's no way these two old guys were carrying it on their own. They had some people helping them. But there's a lot of debate about why so many spices. And there's no clear consensus. There's a lot of educated guesses is the best way to describe it. There's no way we're going to know for sure unless, you know, they invent a time machine and I can go back when it happened and ask Nicodemus, why'd you take so many spices? But I think the reason Nicodemus went all out was because in his eyes, this was the death of the Messiah promised long ago. The true king had been killed. And this is the Good Friday that we celebrate today. We call it Good Friday because we kind of know the rest of the story, right? We know what happens. We know Jesus is raised on the third day. They didn't. There was hopelessness. I think we see it even more when we look at this burial that we have in the Gospel of John. You see these two guys coming out of hiding because they think it's over. There's no point to hide anymore. Jesus is dead. You see Nicodemus going all out with spices because he wants to make sure this guy is looked after because he believed him. And the reason we can sit here and read that and say, oh, it's a Good Friday, is because we know the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ gave all of humanity an opportunity to have a restored relationship with God. We know how the story ends. So we can look at this story and kind of have hindsight in a sense. And I think because of that, when we look at this story, it can help us when crap has hit the fan in our own life to have a new lens that knows that there's always hope no matter how dark it gets because the light of Christ has overcome the darkness. This doesn't minimize what goes on in our life. It doesn't say, you know, we should get over it. It doesn't say, oh, who are you to cry? Like, I'm not saying any of that. I think it's right to cry. I think it's right to feel those feelings. It's normal. But, you know, we don't get a book. What we have with the gospel so often is we got this beautiful book that we can read chapters ahead. We know how the story finishes. We don't get that with our own life. We don't get to see what our life looks like at the end, to see the full story of how everything planned out. We can only deal with the present. And sometimes the present sucks. Sometimes the present's hard, and it's crap. But I think leaning on stories like these and remembering some of the heart behind Good Friday can help us. It can help us remember that the light of Christ has overcome the darkness, that there's hope. And I think the first Good Friday shows us that no matter how dark it gets or appears, the light of Christ can overcome any darkness. So we can have a new lens that is full of hope. A new lens and a new perspective that we try to have that's always full of hope. Not minimizing the poop going on. Not saying to friends, oh, don't cry on it. You should have hope. If any Christian, when something bad happens, comes up to you and says you shouldn't cry or shouldn't be sad about it and, you know, it's going to work out all right, just kick them in the shins. God's there with you in the crap. It just means while the crap's going on, we can have hope. We can know that we believe in a God that does the impossible. We believe in a God that's overcome the darkness. So if we believe all that, we can have that little glimmer of hope in those times. We can try to have that new lens, as hard as it is, knowing that things could get better, which will allow us not to get stuck in the crap going on. We'll be able to kind of see a bigger picture. Knowing the present right now is a lot to handle, but the present, it will change. Just like kids grow up really fast. Like I feel like it was yesterday, I just had one kid who was little Caleb, who was, he was a little funny one. I dropped him on his head once as a baby. Maybe that's why he's got some of the problems he has. But who knows? But I remember him as a little kid. He's 11. He's about to be in high school. Like, he is closer to getting out of my home now than being in my home. Like, that is insane. He's going to be an adult. He's turning 12 this year. Soon he's going to be an adult. I can't protect him. I can't tell him what to do. And not only that, when he's turning 12, there's coming a point where when he's little and when kids and stuff are little, you get to have a place in the world. I get to know about what's going on with my little Gideon and Esther because they're still young. But as they get older, you kind of get this way where you're invited into your kids' world. When they become teenagers, they start getting their own mind, their own thoughts, their own beliefs, and they're inviting you in to those conversations. And then one day, they'll be adults where they can go do whatever they want, and they don't have to tell you squat. But they can. They can invite you in. So things are going to change. Always, no matter the stuff in front of us, no matter what we're dealing with, things will change, and we can have hope that it's going to be better because we know what happened on the first Good Friday. And this is why I wanted to take communion this Good Friday together, to try to remember the new lens that we have, thanks to the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, which can help us have hope no matter the darkness in front of us. Because we know how the story finishes, and the light of Christ has overcome the darkness and restored humanity. All we have to do is lean into Christ in our here and now, the best that we can. It's all we're asked to do. So today, we're gonna finish off this message just by having a time of communion. And the way that we do it here normally is we have two tables either side. We're just going to have one table at the side where you can go and collect communion. Carol is going to help with some gloves on to do, you know, COVID safe and all that. But you can take your time. I want you to get your communion. Eat your bread when you want. That represents the body of Christ. But with the blood, I just want to take that together. So if you guys want, when you feel ready and comfortable, feel free to stand up and go get communion, and I'll play a little song for us as well. I'm just going to say a prayer before we take cups together, and then Karen in a moment will get up and lead us in a couple more songs of worship. God, I thank you so much for who you are. I thank you for your love and your mercy and your grace. And I thank you that you can help us have hope in the darkness. I pray that you help us have this new lens that's hard to have at times when crap's hit the fan in our life, when stuff's put before us that just seems like pure darkness and we don't know where the light is anymore. I pray that you'll help us remember the first Good Friday. Remember the hope that you brought to this hopeless situation and how you're a God that can bring the incredible out of anything. And help us to trust in that. And this morning, we are taking communion to honor what you did on the cross. And your amazing name. Amen.